Hi, everybody. Welcome back. So for the previous module, JD has shown you how to use the tools to measure the performance, how to find out the bottlenecks. And I assume by now you are all expert on measuring the performance and using F12 and all the tools we talked about there. OK, so in this module, we're going to actually talk about once you figure out where the bottlenecks might be and what are you going to do with that. So we're going to actually talk about the first few principles, which is how to respond to the network requests. We should have the fast network response as fast as possible, and how to minimize the number of bytes you download there. So really, quickly response to the network requests is so important. Remember the network latency demo I did with JD? You know, the network latency is always there, but it's really up to us to make it run much faster. So we're going to share with you some of the tricks and tips on that. And then we're going to actually talk about how to minimize the number of bytes downloaded there so that you will be able to see your page start to display very quick. So let's get into the first principle. Quickly responds to network requests. This is quite a busy diagram, but don't get scared. This is basically, I put it there so that you will understand your network timing. It actually break into different steps onto this network timing. You could use that to find out your navigation time, your resource downloading time, your user time, and it is really cool to use. And then if you look at that, there's quite a lot of different kind of methods to associate with each of the steps, right? So for example, if I want to actually find out my navigation time, right, I could actually go into a little detail to find out what is my direct redirect situation. Did I do any cache? Doing the app cache, and what kind of DNS I'm having, what happened in my request and response, so that all those particular methods is going to provide you the time API. Now, the timing API is relatively new. It's actually a standardized timing API. So thanks to the timing API, we will be able to have better resolution on our timing. And then this is actually something you could actually see it in the DOM, which we're going to actually take a quick look later on. And then in addition to all those redirect, app cache, request and response, all those steps are something we're going to actually address for the rest of the modules. All right, so actually let's actually get into a site. We'll just pick any site, it's kind of handy. And again, I hit F12 tools, which I see this particular nice useful tool that JD has talked about in a previous module. And then the particular one I'm interested in is the console. Like we said, a console is going to show you a lot of information. So let's actually try to play with some of the DOMs. So let's pick Windows. I want to take a look at the performance. Look at how neat it is. I don't have to do all the typing. And this is a timing API I'm interested in. All right. So now we could take a look, you know, for this particular site, what is timing API or information it would be providing. So by click on this particular, a global object, and we will see the rest of the sub-objects. So now it looks familiar to you. You will see all kinds of methods with the timing associated with each of the stage on that network timing diagram. For example, what's the app cache situation? You have a fetch start. What is a load event situation? How long does it take to load? When does your navigation is going to start? This is good. We're not using any redirects here. So it's zero here. And then when your request is going to start, when you're going to see the response, and so on. So this is, if you really want to look into all the detail into that timing diagram, this would be actually a good place to getting more information. Okay, so let's get back to talk about our first tip. Okay, avoid redirection. Now, a lot of times, because you want to get a quick network response, so you really have to watch out how you handle the redirect. Sometimes for the convenience, we're just actually putting something in the request, right? And then, you know, in the response, we would just say, for the convenience, we will just do a redirect to some other site, right? However, you may not know that just by doing so, it could easily cost you up to 250 milliseconds. So 250 milliseconds is not trivial. It is actually could be 10% of your performance. So think about it, you just simply do redirect, could cost you about 10%. And then you should think about it, do you really need to use redirect? Does that make sense to use redirect? Could I try to avoid it? So most likely you should avoid it, because then you could get your 10% gain here really easily, right? But then don't overlook at that. We actually took some statistics from 1,000 top websites. And we see actually 63% of the top websites, they are doing 300 level redirect. So in other words, just by avoid using redirect, we could actually saving those 63% of websites to get 10% performance gain. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Without really changing your code, look at architecture, finding a better algorithm, just using data tips. Avoid using redirection. Keep in mind. Next, we're going to share with you is the MetaFresh. Okay, so the MetaFresh refresh, we use it, right? You know, it's not like we're going to, you know, totally forget about that. But overall, it is not a good pattern. Right. So you just try to refresh something. You don't really have to use a meta refresh because by using it itself, it's not a good pattern. It's going to actually slow down your network loading. So if you can avoid using that tag, because there are so many other ways you could do that, you don't have to use a meta refresh.
Isn't it also a problem because it has to load the page to get to that meta tag,
right,
and then do the refresh? So it's unnecessary lag between.
Right.
Actually wanting to get done what you're needing to get done, which is to refresh the page or redirect the page.
Very true. And then it has to sort of done in a synchronized way.
Right.
It will block the thread, yeah, so that you should try to avoid it. And then, well, 14% of the worldwide URLs, they contain meta refresh. So I'll just go back, check your code to see if you're using meta refresh. See if you could avoid using that. And you could actually get quite a bit of performance gain there.
I'm glad the numbers are low, though, because it did remind me of kind of like the older web, like before like JavaScript and DOM libraries
right,
kind of really took off.
That
I remember doing.
It's kind of
like
popular,
that.
Right? Yeah. We do that, but nowadays with modern browsers, you know, this is something, you know, maybe we should avoid, because there's so many good APIs, so many alternative way of doing things. 14%. So check your code. The next we're going to share with you is use a CDN, content distribution networks. So this is something, you know, you may be familiar with, maybe you already use that. So let me actually talk a little bit more about that. So let's look at this kind of scenario. The client is running some kind of app, say in Atlanta, and it's trying to access a CDN, which is loaded in Redmond, which is here. And then you would assume you could have a direct kind of network transfer, right, round trip like this. So it would be not too bad. Say it would be about 2,500 miles one way, 5,000 overall, you know, okay. But what if there's another scenario, meaning you may not actually have a direct router like this. You may actually maybe go through California. That's actually where my hometown is. I'm actually based in Silicon Valley. Maybe decide to go through San Francisco, right? Instead of direct go to Redmond. So if this is a reroute like this, then you probably have to say putting another 1,000 miles there. So it will make it just 3,500 one way. So round trip would be 7,000 miles, right? So 7,000 miles round trip travel, this is a non-trip. It could easily cost you about, say, based on the fast network speed, 350 to 400 milliseconds. So if you look into that, that's actually going to have the equivalent cost of performance by 10 to 15%. Just by using a CDN, if you're just using any of the CDN, this is something maybe happening, right? So another way to look into that is, because the whole idea here is quickly response to the network requests, right? That's a whole thing about talking about for all the techniques we're going to share with you in the rest of the module. So the other things you could look into is, what if I may have some geo-located resources, like a cloud, right? Azure, Amazon, or Google I/O. All those crowd could be locally sort of located, just say near Atlanta, right? So in that case, you probably could think about some of the static content you could use crowd to get in from crowd. That way, the travel, the distance to travel is much shorter, and then you could take advantage to getting faster network response. Okay, so something to look into, you know, I'm sure you use a lot of CDNs, and, you know, you may want to look into where the server of the CDN resides, and maybe you have even better way to get your network request.
But before you move on to the next section on CDN, I've seen this a lot with JavaScript developers. They'll take a JavaScript source file that's on, let's say, a library's website, and they'll try to use that as the CDN copy of the JavaScript file. And that is may not necessarily be the case. Always check to make sure that the if you're using a CDN or using like a script CDN for your JavaScript, that it is a legit CDN, and you're not just draining bandwidth and resources from someone else's site or hot linking. So make sure that you are using a verified CDN for your JavaScript.
Very true, very true. Okay, so we talk about, you know, try to get as fewer as a network download as possible. But you know, you may want to actually look into some other scenario. For example, we're doing a client and a server kind of transfer. And most people think a client and a server, that's just a one pipeline kind of transfer, right? Going there, getting response back. However, you may not know for each of the client, it could make at least up to 6 connections to per domain. So, you know, it obviously depends on the version or depends on the nature of your browser you're using. But at least for modern browser, for IE, you should at least get, starting with IE10, you should get at least 6 connections. And that applies to most of the browsers as well. So 6 connections, you could use them concurrently. So in other words, you could actually transfer, say you have multiple images, right? So you could actually assign different images on a different connection. And then what's even better is you could even use multiple domains, right? So with a multiple domain, think about it, say I have up to 6 connection, and then I have a second domain which get in, or could have up to, you know, many domains. So each domain will actually give you 6 more connections. So you're working with 12, 24, 36, or even 48 connections. So you could actually downloading your resource in so many connections at the same time. So that is greatly going to improve your network response time. So instead of just using one connection, always try to use your concurrent connection at the same time. This is going to help you to do the network decoding, all the image like deserialization, all those things. So greatly help you with a network response time.
If you're following along and you're wanting to find more information on this, I believe it's called domain sharding, which you can do a search for and get some more information on. So cool.
Right. Good tip. So you decide you're going to use the concurrent connection. Now, one thing you need to watch out is a lot of times I see some of the servers, they forget to use that connection which has been already established. So what happens here is if you look at the HTTP response, and you will see there is one called a connect. connection. And then you will see the same connection actually is set to be close. Once it's close, meaning you're not going to reuse all the connections you already established. You have to reopen another connection and redo it. So make sure you check. You don't want to leave your connection property to be close so that you could take advantage of reusing that connections and get a faster network response. So this is another tip to share with you. Okay, so we just talked about how you could actually faster response to your network request. And this is ultimately important, especially you see we will have some network legacy no matter what. But by doing that, it will help you to reduce that network legacy. Hence, overall, the network performance will be much better. So from this module, what we're going to talk about is how to minimize the number of bytes downloaded. This is also very important. Why is it important? Let's take a look at some of the statistics. These data are from HTTP archive site. So if you look at that, you will see a typical average payload will actually require 93 resources in the request and over 16 hosts. So this is really a piece of statistics. 93 resources, it's non-trivial, right? It's an average payload, right? So look at that. And if you look into the what is the nature of that 93 resource, and you will see 55 of them are images, followed with the 17 piece is loading your JavaScript. So images and the JavaScript are the top two resources that most website will require. Hence, if we look into that, we want to minimize the download. These are the things we're going to look into. So again, you know, in the rest of the modules, we're going to actually focus on talking about how to deal with images, how to work with them more efficiently, and how to work with JavaScript.
So before you get on to the next section, this is something that's close to my heart because I work with JavaScript and JavaScript libraries, and I see devs, you know, fretting over the download size of their JavaScript library and how much it adds to page weight. But from the diagrams that we've seen, if you cut out an image or you optimize an image, you can offset the balance of the cost of the JavaScript file. So sometimes you don't have to drop jQuery or use a third party micro library. You can stick with the quality and the trusted libraries that you're using, and then offset the cost in images or some other area, which is, I think, good for JavaScript developers to understand that a lot of times they'll reach for the smallest thing available, and that smallest thing may not be the most tested or as well established. And so if you just optimize an image here or there, you can actually offset the cost of an entire JavaScript library or a couple of jQueries, you know, at once. So.
Very true, very true. Okay, the second piece of statistics, which is interesting, is about the total size per page, right? So if you look at the second piece of statistics here, it says for every page, it has about 1.7 megabytes in total size. And only 46% of those pages are cacheable. So you really have to think about, so that means even for low-end mobile devices, only 46% of the pages, the content, are cacheable. So, which means more than half of the pages, regardless where they are not cacheable. So, does that make sense? Is that something we should actually pay attention? We should sort of watch out? So this is really a good piece of statistics and share with us so that we know where to watch out. So we're going to actually talk about how to cache data as much as you can. But if you look into the total size, 1.7 megabytes, and you will actually see the consistent result. Again, images are the dominant piece among that 1.7, and the follow-up with image is JavaScript. And then we have the other things like HTML, CSS, and so on. Okay, so again, I'll go back. We're going to actually focus our strategies on working with images and JavaScript.
Right, and the amount of code that's being re-downloaded, that always reminds me of like if I'm traveling abroad and I've got a cell plan with a data limit and I'm roaming, mm-hmm. and I have to visit that web page and it's just downloading all this stuff over and over mm-hmm. again. I realize now that that's why, you know, you have the options in your data plan to, like, disable images
right.
loading on the page, because right. if it's 46%, you know, is not being cached mm-hmm. or you're losing that
definitely.
That you're hitting that cost every single time the page loads. That's dramatic. Like, I can't.
Yes, because you're actually sending the network request again and again,
yeah.
right? That's wasting resource. And you try to getting all the download again and again, right? And then stored on your local device. And we even could talk about it. You know, if you're not doing the convention of the capitalization carefully, you could end up with getting multiple copy, even though it's the same file. So that's actually something we really want to talk about, and you need to watch out in your application. So, first of all, GZIP. GZIP is, we should just take it for granted. It's there, right? It's there for you to use. This is one of the first technique we want to remind people you could use to minimize the number of bytes downloaded. So, by most of the case, by default, you will already see the GZIP is already there, right? So, you actually will see in the request, you actually have this option. It's usually enabled with the GZIP capability, right? And then in the response, and you will see the content will be actually encoded in a compressed format from the server. And then that server will actually send in the compressed data over the net. So meaning you could get a smaller amount of data compared to you have the regular data. So on the client, when you get the compressed data, you actually expand them, right? You're decoding them and then to the regular size, and then you keep on using them. Now, this is GZIP is actually very useful, and most of the servers, they use that, right? But, you know, sometimes maybe unintentionally, you sort of, you know, just sort of like disabled, you know, for no reason. So it is actually a good idea to go back to your code to check in the header request and response to see you are really leveraging GZIP. This is the first tip, you know, I want to share with you. And you would be surprised that sometimes you're not really using GZIP at all. And it's really almost effortless. You're not doing much in the code at all, just checking those options still there and not.
I actually had this happen on my own site. So I host a site for a JavaScript library, and I used a web page test that we'll cover mm-hmm. In a demo later. Mm-hmm. And it alerted me that I wasn't using my GZIP headers appropriately. And so I was delivering JavaScript files that were not being GZIPped. You can also use the F12 tools. It'll allow you to inspect the individual resources mm-hmm. and see if the headers are being sent appropriately too.
So this is really good. JD has the experience. And then, so after you actually turn on the GZIP, does the performance get a lot better?
It makes a dramatic difference. So anytime you're doing marketing for your JavaScript library, you always report the minified GZIP size because it's so much smaller than the non-GZIP. So for example, my own library that I use is 15 or 16 kilobytes un-GZIPped, it's actually close to 30 kilobytes or more un-GZIPped, but GZIPped it's 16 or 15. So it cuts it in half or more by using GZIP. And it's something that's so easy to just make sure that it's enabled on your server.
Very true, very true. Good tip, very a good tip to start with to look into your code. All right, so second thing is, obviously we talk about try to minimize the number of bytes download as much as possible, right? So the other things we want to talk about is perhaps even a better way is not to download anything from the network at all if you can. So that's a second thing we want to talk about. So how do we do that, right? Now, so if you actually have a web application, right, and you're actually going to port it into Windows app, right, and you will actually see on the Windows platform all those resources are actually stored in the package, and especially static data, all those things, and it's local, right? So it actually packages it locally and then install it onto the machine. So you don't really have to get in any additional network resource if you actually port that web application into a Windows app application. So this is something if you do a Windows app, then you never have to worry about that. It's all packaged. Now, what if you say, I'm not doing a Windows app. I'm just a traditional web developer. I'm doing just a website, right? So what I could do in the browser? Okay, good question. So let's talk about that. So in the browser, thanks to HTML5, there is a new feature called App Cache. I don't know if you have heard about that, but this is a really useful cache for you to work with. So if you look into this particular diagram, you will see the web application is actually, when you have the network, so first you're going to actually go to your server and say, okay, getting all the resources I want for me to actually run this application. Now, once you've done the very first time, in the mechanism of HTML5 app cache, you actually could specify some kind of file, which I could talk about in more detail. It is say, okay, we got all the resources locally. What are the things you actually want cached or captured locally? So you could define in your file to say, these are the audio files, video files, JavaScript, and things like that I want to capture. So they actually will keep locally. So second time, when you go to the web, or you actually do it, run the application again, it's not going to ask the network, it's not going to ask a server to get in those resources again. It could just use a local cache to do it. Now, what's even better is you could have an offline application, right? Why do we need an offline? It's very useful. For example, your kids is playing kind of game, right? And then at home, you have very fast Wi-Fi or network. He or she is having a great time. But when maybe move outside, you know, outdoor, you go to a restaurant, and your kids want to say, hey, you know, I cannot play this game anymore. What's going on? Because maybe there is no network there, right? But with this kind of offline storage, you will make sure your kids could still play a game so that you could have a peaceful dinner or food later on. So it's useful to use HTML5 app cache, especially work with offline kind of stage. Now, what's even more about this HTML5 app cache is, for example, you get offline and running all the local data, and then that's very cool. But what if, say, you change some resources on the network, right? You have a different version, like a V2. You upgraded your app. So by then, it will actually automatically checking that a new resource from the server and compare with the file you specified to say what are the local files you need to capture. If they feel there's a new version on the server, they will actually automatically fetch it there into the local client. So you could actually save a V2, a new version there. So this will make this particular HTML5 app cache really, really powerful. So if you look at that, the particular file you want to specify what are the local files you want to cache, it's called manifest file. It's based on manifest syntax. And very much, you could rely on manifest to handle a situation like a totally offline scenario so that it will improve the performance as well, will improve the operational expense and make your end user much more happier. And then a lot of things, like I said, you could do the imagery, audio or video file, some scripting style sheet, libraries. You could save all kinds of those resources into the local cache. And then again, app cache mechanism allow you to get in all the new files. You know, you could update them when you have a new version. So let's talk about what we're going to do inside how to implement them, right? So if you look at this next slide, you will see first, you actually defining some kind of manifest file. Manifest file is so easy to config, right? And anybody could do that. Even though you don't know how to write code, you could still config that. So for example, I have a little timestamp to specify what is the time, which version I want my local files to be, all the files to be cached. So in this case, I want to cache a logo. And then I still want to keep an MP4, which is a video file, onto the net. I want to get it every time because maybe it's too big to cache. And then sometimes I want to actually have a fallback mechanism, meaning, you know, if I have totally out of net and there's no way I could play with that, I want to show something, right, to make the kids or any user happy. I want to know, oh, there's no network, so this is all we could show you, right? So these are the sort of like the fundamentals you could configure in a manifest file. Then afterwards, you may say, where should I put it, right? Should I put it anywhere, right? So there is a place you need to config in HTML file. So let's actually go back to the slide again and take a look. So inside of HTML, okay, so do you know the difference between HTML4 and HTML5 kind of file? So the trick here is, this is a little sidetrack. HTML, if it's just listed as HTML, that's a HTML5 file. If it's really, you know, have something about a little permission, little XML, you know, all the data afterwards, that means it's still an old version. It's like still HTML4. So that's a way you could distinguish if your HTML page is really HTML5 supported or it's a regular sort of like old HTML page. So this is a HTML5 feature. So we need to use HTML as an open tag. And then you're defining your manifest and you specify, for example, our manifest file. In this case, it's called test.appcache, right? So you just have any of the, it's arbitrary. You don't have to call it a test. It could be any name. So put it there. And then you could actually take advantage of appcache mechanism. So you're probably still a little puzzled about, you know, what's going to happen, you know, in real time. So first, let's actually take a look at an app. So this is an app which is running from, let me actually quit the F12 tools for now. Maybe you could even hear some nice sound. Okay, so this is on IE Test Drive. IE Test Drive is a wonderful site if you actually want to learn more new features in HTML5. And then you could actually get in the full site like this. You go through each of the unique feature and the different category, and you could see which one you want. So for example, I want to look into AppCache. I could look into the AppCache demo. And this particular A Day in the Park, the kids storybook, is one of the demo we're using for, let's see if we could make some sound to work. I could hear some audio sound. You could see some pictures loading, right? You could actually see even more little like motions here. All right, and it's gonna go back, right? So let me actually mute the sound so we could talk. So all those resources, the audio files, the video files, the images, the style sheet, the JavaScript, all those things could be actually cached and configured in the manifest file. So later on, you could actually just get it from a local file. Just like at the beginning, right, you actually would see this particular demo could run in offline mode. And you could actually try at home to actually try this demo to see first time you run with the internet, second time you actually turn off your Wi-Fi or internet and see how well it could work. Okay, so this is really a demo code to demonstrate how to use AppCache in your code. And then I would love to show you, you know, you may be wondering, okay, I'm kind of curious, you know, what is in the manifest file is configured for this particular demo. So let's actually go back to I'm using Visual Studio, and then I'm actually showing you this manifest. It's called app.manifest, and what you can see here is this is version 1, and the cache data, including bunch of images, right, as well as audio files, MP3 files, all the GIF files, so you see some nice GIF effect, and you also see some nice words, and it does have a fallback if you say, network disconnected, a kind of message there. So it's a really easy way to config your app cache, and then this is just one of the demo you could see. And then really, if you go back, I already did some download, so you could see actually all the audio data is already loaded locally, so you could actually see them. This is really, you know, from the network. But you could also decide to leave all those data on the net. So if you want to actually use refetch data from the net, you could always do that. So it will give you a lot of options to do that. Okay, so I would also like to show you sort of like a real life demo. You know, we use for a particular site called DevDoc.io, and it will actually show you like we work with a lot of. Let's actually go back to the browser. For example, we are actually doing a lot of JavaScript coding, and we do want to use a lot of libraries, right? For example, I want to actually look into AngularJS, so I actually want actually take a look. What's the API, what's the library, what's all those things in AngularJS, right? So I select that. Not quite sure I actually saved it. Maybe I didn't. Let me try it one more time. Okay, save it. Okay, that means I'll tell this website, say, I want to actually look at AngularJS even when I'm doing the offline mode. So with that, we could actually install all the library so that you could actually have a local copy. Now, if you really truly have a really offline kind of mode, when you look at that, you will see all the AngularJS, all the libraries are still there, even with the offline mode. Now, so this is a really pretty useful website to help us to getting or keep track of all the library we need to use, even in an offline kind of mode. So the technology they are using behind is they're using HTML5 app cache. They're using the HTML5 local storage. In addition to all those cool technique, they also use IndexedDB, which I may not have room to talk about in a lot of detail. IndexedDB is another HTML5 new feature. It is really served as a huge database. It's an index-based, very flat, kind of huge table kind of database. And then you could use JavaScript to really manipulate all the data to put into the IndexedDB, to retrieve from IndexedDB. And then API-wise, it's very scripting language friendly. So you could use that to save a little more information. Because see, app cache is basically config that manifest file, right? So you use IndexedDB, you could actually save the whole database table, right? So it would be more powerful, you could save more data. So if you're interested, just look into IndexedDB. As a matter of fact, on IE Test Drive, there is a very cool demo using IndexedDB. Feel free to check it out. Okay, so we talk about app cache. Next, we want to talk about is what if you say, you know, I still need some learning curve to look into the HTML5 app cache. Is that something I could do immediately? Make sure I could cache the content. Yes, there are quite a few things you could do. So let's take a look. So you could always provide some cacheable content. Do you know how to do that? Very simple. You set up your expiration date in response. And then this is basically just say, you know, this is the date. Before that, to check. Before that, I could actually just cache all the data locally so I could use it. So you don't have to waste the time to do the network request again and again, getting same piece of data, even though that data has never been changed, right? Which has happened all the time. So this is one way. Now, the other way is, so you may want to consider is you say, okay, I'm not quite sure. I really know, you know, how long my data is going to stay the same, right? So I may, you know, change my header and it's a news header, it's news feeder, it changes a lot of times, right? I may change some of the ads, right? So if that's the case, then there's another one called the conditional, send conditional requests. So how do you do that is you set up a if modified since kind of syntax to help you to achieve the condition. So first, what you do here is you actually want to actually just set up a particular cache with that a particular date. And then you will actually move on to your condition. So you check that particular date, say if there's nothing changed before that, then totally fine. Let me just keep the cache using the cache. If there's something changed afterwards, then I will do the network download, getting a new copy from the server again. So these are a really good way to do the conditional checking. Another one I want to share with you, it's a cache data request. So very few people really cache in your data HTTP data request. Only 1% of people doing that. But really, you could actually do it in the jQuery AJAX call. Very simple, just by turning this cache data into true. Because most likely, 95 to 96% of time, you are getting the same data request again and again. So why you have to waste a resource to getting the same data request? Just by turning that cache into true, you could actually cache your data. Right? So one thing to check in your code, especially you making a bunch of AJAX call, this is actually would be a good way to do that. The one more thing I want to talk about is how to standardize your capitalization. Okay, case, you have a lowercase icon, very nice. Then later on, somehow you change your mind to change it into an uppercase kind of icon. Okay, fine. That's what you do. And then that's a Keras developer case. You just have a little typo, right? So all these three icons, they are actually the same icons, the same piece of image. And then for the server, maybe they're smart enough to figure out they're the same image. But then for the web platform perspective, they're not the same. Right? So you look at that, there are actually three different pieces of files. They're going to make three different network requests to the server. They're getting three same logo files, three copy images on the machine. So you're really wasting a lot of network resource as well as number of bytes downloading for your icon images. So try to make sure you watch out what you put, the capitalization, and make it standardized throughout all your apps. Go back and check. I'm sure you're going to get some performance gain. So very nice. And we share with you quite a few tips, how you could actually quickly respond to your network requests. And then we also talk about the particular different tools to cache data, how to make the conditional setting for your cache, how to actually use HTML5 app cache. And then in general, just try to minimize number of bytes, download as much as you can. Or what's even better is use local cache as much as possible. See you. Thank you.